it under a blanket. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another Quarantini Soda. I'm horrified.
Hello, friends. We're so glad to be back and so sad that we have to be back, but here we are.
Here we are. I encourage everyone who can to get under a blanket like I currently am. I'm cuckoo.
Do I have one? I don't have one in this room.
Allison, can't believe you.
Throw pillows everywhere, but nothing that's going to serve me a functional purpose, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Well, if you have a blanket, wrap it around you, just because might as well be cozy.
Yep, curl up under that duvet, the place I've been for most of the past month.
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
You know, my therapist says, as long as it doesn't become a problem. And I told her, isn't that your job to tell me when it becomes a problem? But just...
Maybe it's like pornography, like I can't give you a definition.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll know it's a problem when I see it.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I start taking my meals in the underneath the comforter, then maybe we're slipping more into that clinical depression area. But right now we're at that like good denial, treat yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
Totally fine. I say as long as my partner's not eating lunch as I get out of bed, that's okay.
Yeah, that's morning.
I think that's still the morning.
Yes.
So, what are we here to talk about today?
Well, it's another Disney day, folks.
It's part of Disney Fortnite.
Very exciting. Today we're going to talk about who the evilest Disney villains are.
The evilest. The which most may evil. Or may not be a word.
The most evil. The maximum evil of Disney villains. And the then we're also each going to take a moment and get a little horned up and talk about who the sexiest Disney villains are.
A quick little extra for you.
Yes.
Read all about it.
Absolutely.
But that's just going to be a little sexy side note. Maybe we should save both of our sexy side notes till the end.
Till the end? Okay.
So you do your evilest, I'll do my evilest, and then we will get nice and turned on.
Great.
Yeah. It's not just you out there, OnlyFans. We're here to help out, too. So, Samantha Buntich.
That's me.
Who's the evilest? Who's your evilest villain?
Yes, so I'm picking someone to talk about today who is not, you know, the most powerful and who doesn't have, like, the biggest plan for world domination, but who I really think is, like, the most insidious. And that is... Yes, thank you. That was a good vocab word. That is Lady Tremaine from Cinderella. So she is Cinderella's stepmom.
That is a good one.
She's a grade A cunt.
She is a huge cunt, is the thing.
Yeah, so, and I kind of forgot about it, and then we watched Cinderella not that long ago, Al. I don't know if you remember, we were, like, babysitting, and
we were babysitting, the son of one of our former guests, Walt McGuff.
Yes, we were. And we watched Cinderella and it just like grinded my gears, like how much of an awful human Lady Tremaine is to Cinderella.
She fucking sucks. She's fucking awful. Sucks.
So for those who like are not initiated on Cinderella, like where have you been? But basically tells the story of Cinderella, who's this like very nice young woman, and her father remarries when she's like pretty young to a woman, Lady Tremaine, who has two daughters. And at first it's like, great, we're going to be a little family. And then her father dies. So she's now being raised by her stepmother.
Probably because her stepmother killed the dad, is my guess. They don't even hint at that at all in the movie.
No, but
that seems like the case.
Who knows? But probably because she sucks. But so she ends up being raised by Lady Tremaine and her two daughters. And they like, force her to live in the attic. They treat her like their maid. They make her do all the housework in the house because, like, technically, Lady Tremaine was the person who inherited all of the money from her dead dad. So, like, Cinderella has nothing, and she just has to be totally subservient to these people while, like, dreaming of a different life and getting, like, totally stepped on every day.
They're, like, comically mean to her.
They really are. And, I mean, it's a Disney movie, so it makes sense that it's, like, a little inflated. But I think, like, the really frustrating thing is, like, it's not that inflated. Like, there are, like, toxic families in the world, you know what I mean? And Lady Tremaine and the stepsisters are, like, the prime example of, like, we like to say that, like, blood is thicker than water, and family is, like, can be so awesome and so important to people, but, like, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they drag you right down.
Yep.
And it's, like, so frustrating to see poor Cinderella, who is doing her best all the time, just, like, trying to get by, be consistently, like, pushed down by this person who should be, like, there for her and should be sympathetic towards her.
Yeah, she's just, like, endlessly shat on the whole movie. It sucks.
Exactly. And who helped raise her. Like, I was talking last episode about Timon and Pumbaa adopting Simba as a cub and, like, raising him and loving him. She does the opposite of that. Like, she's raising a child and has, like, no love or no sympathy for this child.
Yeah, and like, open contempt for her.
And it fucking sucks. So, yeah, so it's, you know, it'd be easy to be, like, Maleficent's the most evil because she can turn into a dragon. Like, that's bad.
I'm bored. Yes, but, and what?
Yeah, but I think when we talk about Disney movies, and you were talking about this in the last episode, Al, like, we kind of talk about, they're for kids, right, as much as we like to talk about them. So the important thing to kind of take from them are what are lessons that children can learn from these movies. And I think, like, the example of Lady Tremaine being, like, someone in a position of authority who should be taking care of Cinderella but isn't, and Cinderella ultimately has to, like, in her own way, and, like, she's not the best example of this, but she fights for what she wants. She goes to the ball, she gets out of her, like, locked attic room with the help of her little mice friends. Like, she has to rebel against this person who's supposed to have her best interest at heart, but we all know doesn't, in order to get her happy ending. And I think that's a really important lesson for some kids to learn of, like, you know, you have to be able to do your best. You have to stay nice. You have to stay kind, but you can't always just, you know, be resigned to people treating you poorly sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, your situation now isn't going to be your situation forever.
Yes. 100%.
And, you know, ultimately goodness wins. And I really believe that.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, sometimes bad people don't get their comeuppance, but they don't get to lead the life that you get to lead if you live by your values and with kindness in your heart. They will never get the joy that you get.
Absolutely. So that's why Lady Tremaine is my pick. And then her stepsisters also, like, deeply suck, but I have more sympathy for them because A, they've been raised by this, like, very shitty mother, so that's not great. And B, at least one of them gets a redemption arc in the sequels. Maybe both of them do.
Yep, I remember that. I like that, like, off-brand sequel.
Yes. I think it's Anastasia, like, ends up with, like, a boyfriend who's a baker, and, like...
What's the other one? Grisabella? Nope, we had this issue last time. You're mixing me up. Anastasia and Grisabella the Glamour Cat.
No, there is a cat in this, but his name is Lucifer, which is hilarious.
What a great character.
Maybe he's the ultimate Disney villain, Lucifer.
Honestly, he's a stone cold cunt too.
He tries to eat Jack-Jack and Gus-Gus so many times. They're mice for reference.
Very excited for the two of us to Disney bound as Jack-Jack and Gus-Gus.
I think it's really going to match our aesthetic.
That's the plan. I mean, the one tragedy is, like, we have a Disney trip planned together with two of our other friends, and we could film clips, we could put outfits up there for you, we can take you on the whole journey with us if the world comes back to being a world again.
Yeah, if Disney World
I know a lot of people are suffering, I know there's a lot of hardship, but I do think that we can all agree that that is kind of the biggest thing at stake here, right?
Yeah, the content that we would produce in Disney World.
Yeah, our slutty Disney bound as Jack-Jack and Gus-Gus, like...
Ooh, yes.
Like, you know, talk about the solution being worse than the cure. Or no, the cure being worse than the...
problem.
Problem.
Sickness, yeah.
Stop talking. You want to hear about my evilest Disney villain?
I really do. Tell me about it.
I'm sure you do. I went on the same exact path as you, Sam. I also think that I'm kind of going from that psychological perspective of it's not just about who can turn into the biggest dragon, all right?
Because that's Maleficent.
Maleficent's kind of droll sometimes. That's why Angelina Jolie had to come in and spice her up. What am I supposed to say? I love Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty herself is a fucking snore, but whatever. I don't have time for that. My evilest villain pick is Claude Frollo.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, indeed. So, like, Disney princesses, touch and go. Disney storylines, narratives, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But the one thing that I insist that Disney does consistently well across the board is villains. Mm-hmm. I think villains are like, there's so many amazing villains and so few of them to me are flops. Like, I just think so, they're just such wonderfully done characters. And I also think that oftentimes in Disney movies, the villain can tell you so much more about the message of the story than the protagonist can in a lot of ways. And like nowhere is that opinion brought more to the forefront than what I consider to be the most underrated of the Disney Renaissance films besides Rescuers Down Under, which I think is technically a Disney Renaissance film, than Hunchback of Notre Dame. Hunchback of Notre Dame, I always fucking love Hunchback of Notre Dame. Nobody talks about it. We don't talk about it. Why don't we talk about it, Sam?
It's kind of a weird one.
Yes, it's very weird.
Just to tell you what I think is the answer.
It's really fucking dark, and there's parts of it that are rapey, and I just, like, yes, I get it. But I just compliments the blackness of my soul. I was a weird kid. But it's just so good to me. Like, the animation's wonderful. The score is excellent. Tom Hulse, it's a fucking joy in the lead role. His voice is amazing. Esmeralda is problematic, but she's also like very much in charge of her own destiny as a character. She has a lot of impact on the plot, which is not always the case for female characters in Disney movies. But I think one of the best crafted elements of Hunchback is Frollo. I think he's one of the most excellently done characters in Disneydom.
Yeah.
To say it. So originally in the Victor Hugo novel, Frollo was like not a priest, but like a member of the clergy. He was like a deacon or something. And I think when he went to like make the stage adaptation, because Victor Hugo wrote the play also for Hunchback, and they were like, we can't have a member of the church be this rapey. You have to make him something else. So in the Disney version, he's technically the minister of justice. I don't think that's a thing, but he's very religiously fanatical still, and he focuses a lot on ethnic purity and class distinctions. And he fucking sucks, obviously, because of all those reasons. He's very bigoted and mean. If you haven't seen Hunchback of Notre Dame, what are you doing? What are you doing with your time? I don't understand. It's just, it's fucking crazy. You'll be watching it and you'll be like, I can't believe they made this. The whole time, I'm like, I can't believe they made this movie. Who signed off on this? Who wanted that? Whatever. But his story arc goes something like this. So he hates the Romani people who are in Paris, who are in his mind, like infesting the city. They're a blight on his society. But he's also super obsessed with Esmeralda, who's like the sexy, beautiful Romani woman. He chose to raise Quasimodo out of guilt, but continues to emotionally abuse him and undermine his self-worth because of his appearance, and he is deformed, as that's Frollo's words, not mine, and insists that, like, society hates things that are different because he hates things that are different, and difference is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And in the novel, he's very suspicious and hateful with women. Like, his misogyny is like more at the forefront. It's definitely at the forefront in this film, but it's more the forefront of the novel. And he like is like scared of women. Like, they're all out to just like trick him with their magical vaginas, which not all of us.
No, not every day.
And so he has this like fascination and disgust with women he considers promiscuous, which is all of them, I think.
Everyone, yeah.
He sucks. So Esmeralda's kind of like the embodiment of his fucked up attitude about women and how he wants to, like, he hates the object of his desire, which is a common shitty people thing. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he basically tells Esmeralda, like, you can be with me or I'm gonna burn you alive. And she's like, literally, go fuck yourself. Spits in his face. And then he tries to murder her. Quasimodo saves her. He dies in an ocean of fire.
Good.
The end. So in the middle of this is we're going to talk about his song. In the middle of this, he has the boldest musical choice made by the Disney Animation Studios Corporation. A song called Hellfire, which it's so bold. And again, it's one of those moments during Hunchback where you're like, I cannot believe they made this. Like, I cannot believe.
So true.
They laid tracks down and recorded this. It boggles the mind. But so the song is all about how he's struggling to obey God's will due to his uncontrollable lust for Esmeralda. He prays for strength to fight against her witchcraft and ultimately comes to the conclusion that she will be mine or she will burn.
Yep.
That's a lifted lyric. So what this comes down to is that, like, the song's fucking crazy and you're just watching it. It's the song's fire, literally and figuratively. It's like, whoa, like, I like listening to it because it's crazy. But this sort of, what this whole character arc tells me about him is that he is a character who is ruled entirely by fear, and his evil is the product of his fear. He's not just evil. Like, Maleficent's just evil. Like, she shows up and you're like, that bitch is evil.
Yep.
He is. That's part of her deal. But his evil is rooted in his need for control through fear. So his fear of the unknown and people who are different from him, obviously. But, like, he's more fanatically afraid of, like, God and hell and, like, the knowledge that he is as wicked as he would have everyone else believe they are. Mm-hmm. And, like, what do angry, racist white men do when they're scared of something? They try to control it, they try to overpower it, or they try to destroy it. And we see this manifesting across his, like, all of his decision-making, all, like, everything he does, every choice that he makes, culminating with him hallucinating, seeing the face of Satan when he's, like, in this fight with Quasimodo at the end. He thinks he sees, like, Satan coming to attack him, and he's so scared that he, like, falls to his death. Mm-hmm. And it's his fear is his literal downfall.
There you go.
He falls down.
He falls right down into a pit of fire.
Into the pit of, exactly, which is the thing I'm afraid of, so it's, like, symbol of
fire.
Good movie. I don't know what to say. I know it's weird, but it's really good. So, yeah, I think that's, like, the source of his evil is so convincing and lifelike, and I think it's the most real evil that Disney's ever, like, imbued into a character, at least so far, in my opinion. And it works because it's real. Like, it's arresting because it's real, and deep down we understand his motivation for hatred and destruction, and that makes him all the more believable. And I'm trying to think of other Disney characters that I feel like do this, like other Disney villains that do this.
I feel like we've been talking a lot about Moana lately, but I will say that, like, although she is kind of revealed to not be a villain, to Fiti, who is, like, mm-hmm. you know, the antagonist for a lot of it, like, we later find out that she is, like, a person who has been kind of traumatized by this thing that happened to her. And so she is, like, acting out because she is, like, unable to deal with this, like, trauma. And it's only when, like, Moana is able to approach her, like, as a friend yes. and, like, really care about her that she's able to heal. I think that is a very interesting Disney villain portrayal.
It's true. And I think the other thing is she's not necessarily inflicting it on others. Mm-hmm. She is the earth. And so she's inflicting it on herself.
Yeah. And it's if you get too close.
Personified through these communities who are affected by it. But, like, in reality, she, like, through being violated, she inflicts all this pain on herself. and she doesn't know how to be free of it. And it's beautiful at the end because it's like she can find healing through being understood by, you know, her community through Moana.
Through Moana.
I'm going to cry.
I'm fucking good, you guys.
But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's rooted in what we understand to be true about pain and fear. And I don't have any fun facts like I did last episode, but I do have a yikes fact about Frollo, which is that the filmmakers took direct inspiration for Frollo from, have you seen Schindler's List?
Yes, but not for a while.
So there's Ralph Fiennes is very famous for his portrayal of Amon Goth, who is like an infamous Nazi commander. And they're like, yeah, he was the inspiration. And I was like, oh, okay. This is a okay. Right? But it would like, it works. It's very,
yeah,
it works. He dies at the end. It's all fine.
Good, good, great.
So that's mine. So I think we picked two good ones.
Yeah. I think we were very much in the same mind of like what's important in a Disney villain, which is fun.
Absolutely.
Always love when we're very simpatico.
Always. Always, boo. Speaking of simpatico, it's time to turn up the heat.
Time to get a little horny.
Sam, who is your sexiest Disney villain?
I mean, I think it's really obvious. The sexiest Disney villain is Chernabog from Fantasia.
Wait, what?
I won't be accepting questions at this point.
Wait, I have to look him up.
Please look up Chernabog from Fantasia. So I'm going to just read a little bit about him. So he's a big
nocturnal devil. No, the one who looks like the guy from Lord of the Rings, who's like, you shall not pass. What are you doing?
Giant, dark being with giant wings and very sculpted abs. And he is in Night on Bald Mountain, which is like the famous scariest scene from Fantasia. And he takes people's hearts and he holds power over restless souls. And he's based on the Slavic deity Chernabog, who is, it's Slavic for black god. But he's just like a spooky representation of night and Satan and badness. And he basically, like, in the context of Night on Bald Mountain, he just, like, raises a bunch of ghosts and monsters. He's very spooky. But he's also, like, kind of mysterious and kind of, like, has all this power and these like very defined like ab muscles. And then at the end of it, he has to go away because it's daytime. But so again, I'm not going to accept, honestly. What I liked about him is that he's like the strong silent type. Like he doesn't say anything. He's all about action. Mm-hmm. I liked that he's going to do what he wants to do. He is someone with a lot of like power, which is very sexy. But then at the daytime, he's going to go away, which I think is important.
Yeah. Wow. I learned a lot about you from this one choice that you've made.
Yeah. It's got to be Chernabog. There's no other option.
No contest. That is disturbing.
I went through a whole list of all the Disney like villains, kind of like,
you're like, nope,
all
nope,
out.
Oh.
And I was like, it's got to be Chernabog. And then I went to my partner who was working and I said, stop what you're doing. I need you to look at all the Disney villains with me and tell me who's the sexiest. And he was like, well, the obvious answer would be Gaston, but his personality is a lot. I was yes, absolutely. I agree. And he's clicking through and I'm like, I was kind of thinking Chernabog. And he looks, and he goes, it's gotta be Chernabog. And I was like, yeah.
There's no other like, oh,
hello.
I didn't even consider him. I haven't thought about Fantasia in 100 years. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was very simple.
Yeah, for me, immediate. Mine was also immediate.
Yeah.
I went a little more classic in my choice of, like...
You can't get more classic than Fantasia, Allison.
In person. Or maybe not. I don't know his deal. I think Dr. Facilier. Easy. Easy.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why. He has a silky, sultry voice.
Yeah.
He has the sexiest voice, I think, of any Disney villain.
Yes.
He has excellent taste in hats.
Mm-hmm. Very
he
sexy.
He can dress himself. I think that's hot. He can put a vest outfit together.
Absolutely. I can't do that.
I can't. He has a potent bisexual energy.
Mm.
Like a lot of excellent queer energy. Love that. Yep. Love that for me. And he's into freaky shit. I don't have another way to say that.
Yeah, no, he is. He is.
I respect that. He's going to show you a good time. You might die at the end of it, but you're going to have a good time.
But I would argue you can say the same exact thing about Chernobog.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you might not make it out of there, but
what a time it's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I think we've done a lot of good work here today.
Yeah, I think we've done the work. We've really put in the effort.
Who in the Disney canon do you think is the sexiest villain? Tell us in the comments on Twitter. Write to us at imhorrifiedpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
We want to know.
We must know.
We want to know. You want another thing that I don't want is, do you remember years ago we found a Tumblr that was all like sexual fantasies about Disney characters?
Yes.
At first, I think we thought it was funny. Like, I think we thought like, oh, this is going to be so funny. And then we started reading them and we were like sick to our stomachs. It was so, so descriptive.
Yeah.
I can't unread some of the things that we read on that Tumblr site.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah.
So quick, who's your sexiest Disney hero off the top of your head? First thought,
Hercules.
First thought, Hercules, because of his strong himbo energy.
Second thought, Milo Thatch from, what's it called? Atlanta.
I love that you can
much more in line with my current life.
Yes.
In a sexy, nerdy, well-read kind of way.
Yes.
But in like the, who's going to bang it out best, I'm going to say Hercules. Because he's still a nice guy, so we'll think about your needs.
A himbo. He's a himbo.
Exactly.
That's what I want from my Disney princes.
Yeah, I don't want to marry him. No. But...
Fuck, marry, kill, Hercules, Milo Thatch, Chernobog.
I mean, fuck Chernobog, and then if I live, Milo Thatch. Kill Hercules because I can't kill him because he's already a god.
That's true. He's fine. He's going to be fine.
What's your sexiest hero?
I think it's got to be Hercules because I love him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good
guy. I love the fit, good, stupid man. That's one of my favorite genres of men.
For sure. He's like a big Channing Tatum style.
Yes.
Idiot. We absolutely love that. I love that for me.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done great work here today.
Yeah, I think we have.
You tweeted us with your thoughts on anything we've said in this podcast.
Yeah, I'm sad to see Disney Fortnite come to an end, but we'll be back with some content for you.
Definitely.
Love you. We hope you're making the best of your situation. We just hope you're well. So be well.
Be well. Bye, guys.
I'm Horrified is a Hemlock Creatives production, recorded and produced by us, Sam Bierstow and Allie Gavin, in Boston, Massachusetts. Our art is by Leah Brilliard and Allie Gavin. You can find us on Twitter at I'm Horrified Pod and at imhorrifiedpodcast.com. And you can tell us what horrifies you at imhorrifiedpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us directly on Patreon, you can get our podcast early and ad-free, as well as bonus episodes of our members-only minicasts, I'm Thrilled! Check us out at patreon.com/imhorrified. And if you liked hanging out with us, tell your friends, share us on your socials, and leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for stopping by, Horror Honeys.